I feel as if I should preface this sermon with a disclaimer. I believe firmly that preachers should never use stories about their families in sermons without first obtaining permission from those who might be embarrassed. It is not always an easy rule to follow because family life can be a vast library of sermon illustrations. And no one, least of all me, is a fan of forbidden books. But nonetheless, I have persisted in not using my family in sermons without first asking their permission. This usually means that I don't use my family in sermons. But today I'm going to tell you about a conversation that happened around the Daniel family dinner table 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I share it with the full and willing permission of those involved, except for my nephew about whom we were gossiping. I haven't asked his permission, but I'll protect his identity and his dignity by not using his name. Over the last year or so, this one nephew of mine has grown his hair out long, such that his blonde locks had my kids comparing their cousin's appearance to that of what they called the stereotypical Nordic Jesus. You probably know the Jesus to which they were referring. If you are my age or older and you grew up going to church, this Jesus certainly made an appearance in your Sunday school classroom. Growing up in Mendocino in the 1970s, this Jesus looked a lot like the hippies who were my parents' friends. And when I was in college in Santa Barbara during the 80s, the Jesus started looking more like the surfer dudes that I knew, right? Context is everything. But you know who I mean. This Jesus has long blonde hair. It's not terribly thick, but it has kind of a nice, gentle wave to it. He has a neatly trimmed beard and blue eyes that are at the same time wise and sad. My nephew doesn't have a beard, but he has blue eyes and long blonde hair. He's a bit of a hippie, and he surfs, which is practically walking on water. He's even the son of a carpenter if making guitars is carpentry. So really, my nephew is kind of like Jesus, right? And my kids, as we ate dinner together, wanted to know if Jesus would ever wear his hair in a man bun. Because their cousin sometimes puts his hair up in a man bun. And as we've already established, their cousin is practically Jesus. After some back and forth, the kids decided that if Jesus were alive today, he'd be more likely to have his hair in dreadlocks than a man bun. And having solved that problem, we cleared the dishes from the table and got on with the evening, leaving the possibility that Jesus could have both dreadlocks and a man bun for another supper time of theological speculation. Now, I asked my children's permission to share that story with you in this sermon because by speculating about Jesus' hair and his race, my family in our dinnertime conversation was answering the question that is at the center of both Mark's and Matthew's Gospels. It is the question Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Now, when I say the story is at the center of Matthew and Mark, I mean the physical center. In both Matthew and in Mark, this story is almost exactly halfway through the telling of the story of Jesus' ministry. Mark has 16 chapters, and this story is in chapter 8. In Matthew, the story is at the exact center of the narrative about Jesus' adult ministry, which I suspect is not a mistake. Rather, my guess is that the central placement of this story in the two Gospels is a literary device employed by the Gospel writers to make sure that we readers understand how important this question is. Who do you say that I am? This is a central question in the Jesus story and in our lives. In the story, Jesus and his followers are in a town called Caesarea Philippi, and that is important because Caesarea Philippi is the last town you get to in the historical boundaries of Israel before you go over the border and enter into Syria. At this point in the story, Jesus is starting to get into trouble with the authorities. His friend, relative, and mentor, John the Baptist, has been executed, and Jesus knows that he is not far behind. Placing Jesus in Caesarea Philippi is like putting an outlaw from a Western movie in El Paso, Texas. The outlaw is just one river away from impunity, and Jesus in Caesarea Philippi just had to cross one mountain ridge before he was free. But before Jesus crossed into safety, he asked his followers, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter replied by saying, "You are the Messiah." And this was the right answer. And having heard it, Jesus turned and started his journey towards Jerusalem, where he would die. But first, he had to explain what was going on. He told his disciples that his being the Messiah, the Christ, meant that he was going to have to suffer and die, which Peter didn't like. He rebuked Jesus, and that didn't go so well. It turns out that while Peter knew who Jesus was, he didn't understand what it meant for Jesus to be the Messiah. This exchange, I believe, is spiritually instructive. Answering the question, who do you say Jesus is? Well, it shapes who we are as Christians. And who we are as Christians says a lot about who we think Jesus is. Now, this happens all the time. I don't think I've ever met an opinionated Christian who didn't think Jesus was in full agreement with all of their opinions. I've never met an opinionated Christian who didn't think Jesus looked a lot like them, or maybe like the people they admire. I once attended the National Prayer Breakfast. It's an annual event hosted by an organization called The Fellowship. They're a shady and secretive international group of mostly white, mostly rich, mostly male evangelical Christian power brokers based in Washington, D.C. And at the time, I was interested in joining that organization. But I was a failed recruit. I noticed that everyone at the National Prayer Breakfast seemed to be wealthy, or at least well off enough to own a suit. And I speculated out loud to my fellowship mentor that if no carpenters were in attendance at the prayer breakfast, then Jesus himself could not attend because Jesus was a carpenter. My mentor responded by saying that fishermen on the Sea of Galilee were actually shrewd and successful businessmen, that they would be more like modern real estate agents than like modern blue-collar workers. Well, it turns out the archaeological evidence suggests exactly the opposite to be true, but that didn't matter because in answer to the question, who do you say that I am, my mentor needed to recreate Jesus in an image that was more comfortable and less challenging than the truth. He needed something that would silence my questions so that they didn't become his questions. People are always trying to recreate Jesus so that Jesus isn't challenging. To those who love guns, Jesus was a founding member of the NRA. To those who support legalized cannabis, Jesus was a stoner. About 10 years ago, a scholar by the name of Amy Jill Levine wrote a book about Jesus' Jewishness, which I loved, and I found it to be really helpful until Levine started mocking the idea that Jesus, if he were alive today, would express concern for Palestinians living under Israeli occupation, as if Jesus were some kind of liberal Presbyterian minister. Ouch. So the question then becomes, how should we answer the question of who Jesus is? I think it's important to remember that Jesus was a first century Palestinian Jew who probably cannot fit neatly into modern categories. But still, that answer only sort of works because Christianity has always understood and continues to understand that Jesus is more than an historical character, but Jesus is an ongoing living reality. To make astute observations about the Jesus of history, that he was an itinerant rabbi from Galilee about whom we know very little, for example, this still leaves us a lot to desire when we're looking for the Christ of faith. How do we answer questions about the identity of the Christ of faith without turning Jesus into a hipster or a Rastafarian or a Rotarian or a gun nut or a pothead or a Presbyterian minister or whatever else makes us comfortable and unchallenged? So how do we answer that question? Well, my first answer to that question is to say, how good it is to wrestle with questions like that. If we're wrestling with and are uneasy with any identity for Jesus that makes us comfortable and complacent, then I think we're probably on the right track. My second answer is to say that when it comes to answering the question, who do you say Jesus is, what's important is not what we say about Jesus. What's important is what our answer says about us. After all, Jesus can take care of himself. If you were to ask, who do you say Ben Daniel is? To answer that question, you said, well, Ben Daniel wears a red Make America Great Again hat. His favorite author is Ayn Rand. He's a member of the NRA, and he's fond of the American League's designated hitting rule. That answer would probably give me a nervous breakdown, because I have a need for people to know me and to know who I am. That need is probably based in a certain amount of personal insecurity and in the fact that I don't always even know myself as well as I wish I did. But I'm pretty sure Jesus is more self-realized than I am. I don't think Jesus really cares if you or I misidentify him. But what does matter is what our identifying of Jesus, however correct or incorrect, says about us. Take, for example, Billy Graham, whose passing was observed this last week. Billy Graham left a complex legacy. On the one hand, he was a man of great personal integrity. He was one of a very few great American evangelists whose life and legacy were not marred by personal scandal. But on the other hand, he was largely silent when given the opportunity to speak out in prophetic ways against America's wars or in support of civil rights. On the latter issue, he took small and important steps, but he never really challenged directly the legal and societal structures that upheld Jim Crow in the South or redlining and educational inequalities in places like Oakland. I strongly suspect that Graham's complex legacy is directly tied to his understanding of Jesus. For Billy Graham, Jesus was a personal savior, a friend, a mentor who empowered an individual to live a righteous life. But Jesus was never a revolutionary concerned with societal justice. I would say that the legacy of anyone who tries seriously to follow Jesus will be shaped by the Jesus he or she is trying to follow. So answer the question, who do you say Jesus is? And know that your answer is a gauge of your righteousness, which makes it a hard and challenging question to ask. But it is a question every follower of Jesus must ask and must answer. Who do you say Jesus is? If your Jesus is angry and violent and judgmental, maybe you need to rethink Jesus, lest you yourself become angry, violent, and judgmental. If your Jesus is overly spiritualized, a teacher who just wants to sit around examining his navel, then maybe you need to get your Jesus out into the streets, lest your spiritual practice become too tame. If, on the other hand, your Jesus balances spiritual exploration and transformative social action, if your Jesus is an artist, an activist, a loving friend, someone with a fantastic sense of humor, then I suspect you are well on your way to becoming a better version of yourself. So answer the question, who do you say Jesus is? Answer it thoughtfully. Answer it carefully. Pay attention to your answer, for in your answer about Jesus, you will learn about yourself. And if on your explorations you find out whether or not Jesus wears a man bun or has dreadlocks, share your answer with me. I know some kids who are eager to find an answer to that question. Amen.